Good afternoon and welcome to another SalesStar webinar. My name is Paul Lanigan and my guest today is Philip Walsh, VP of Sales with Quest Information Management. Philip and his team and I spent a day together last year, and the drivers behind that day stemmed from Philip's desire to address certain key pain points that he was experiencing, namely pipeline sufficiency, do I have enough in the pipeline, to pipeline qualification, do I have the right stuff in the pipeline, sales motion cadence, is it moving at the right pace, is the velocity there, and of course revenue flow, what stems from that. And the reason why I invited Philip to join the webinar today was what he did after the event. What he and his team specifically did after the event, where they sat down and they came up, based on what we covered, they came up with their 10 commandments for effective selling. I was really impressed, and when I looked at them, I thought, these are too good not to share. So I've invited Philip here today to share them directly with you. Philip, you're very welcome.
Welcome to sunny Cork. Thanks a million for the opportunity to speak. And again, just to reiterate, you know, it is all around the pipeline sufficiency, qualification, that sales motion cadence. And finally, you know, am I earning commission? Am I realizing that maximum return on my investment? So yeah, the upfront contract for us, really, as a group, we came together after a full intensive day's training, and we extracted the 10 learnings, which we took from many, many learnings on the day, just to see what could we put into everyday practice and what piqued our interest, caught our attention, and we thought would help us to become more effective salespeople. For me, then, it was the upfront contract. It is the defining moment in the client engagement model. You know, it's the heart and soul of the prospecting. We put it top of the list because a well-constructed upfront contract will set us apart from the competition, and it gives our customers a strong sense of control and clarity, and it hopefully puts them at ease. You know, when they say you don't have a second chance to make a first impression, that's what we're talking about here. It's a well-developed and articulate upfront contract. It's invaluable. And people who know me, I spent a long time living in Germany, and one of my favorite German phrases is actually Klartext, clear communication. And that's what the upfront contract does. It lays your cards on the table, and it helps you to define exactly what you wish to achieve with the engagement, but it gives the customer as well upfront the knowledge that they're going to learn something new from the interaction, and it will be worth their while engaging. The next learn,
I was just going to say fantastic, and I was just going to ask you about that, was in terms of the transference, where do you see the guys that you're working with, how do they use it, are they using it to the same effect that you, that you've spoken about, is there anything else?
I think the idea of having that upfront contract, it makes you sit down, it makes you put yourself in the shoes of your prospective, your client. Under what do they want to achieve out of the conversation, and you know, how would I present myself in an articulate, well-developed manner which will not have the client grabbing for the phone to hang it up? So it really focuses, it makes people sit back and consider very carefully, you know, what solution am I offering, what value am I bringing to this conversation? So it's great, and once that gets in, it makes the phone call prospecting much easier, because it's coming out of you in an articulate manner very quickly. Cold calling becomes much, much easier through that preparation.
Super. All right. Commandment number two then.
So this is show the exit. It was actually at the time, Paul, it was part of the upfront contract. Mm-hmm. And you actually mentioned at the time that it was part of the overall upfront contract, but we actually felt it deserved to be called out separately. Like in any walk of life, nobody likes to feel that they are being cornered in a conversation. Mm-hmm. We also feel to go at any time. And if I could, this workshop was also coming from the context of prospecting remotely on a phone, because our teams, they sit either at the office in Cologne, out to Central Europe, or sit here in Cork, out to the rest of EMEA. So it's prospecting on the phone. And what we wanted to achieve with this was, you know, if you feel cornered as a person, your mind will try to think up of excuses to jump. And in that way, you will not be concentrating on the context of the conversation. allowing somebody the knowledge that they could leave at any time, it will hopefully relax the engagement and make the prospect more attentive and open to discussion. And finally, I think it does. It part of the seller in their product or if I actually say to you, Paul, you can walk away at any stage, I think that shows a great strength of belief in the solution, and I think it only adds to the engagement.
Yeah, just a quick point on that, but before I do, I don't know if you can go somewhere, Philip, with a slightly stronger phone signal. It's coming in really clear, and then towards the end, it's getting a little bit mushed up, the audio.
Okay.
But while you do that, just a point on this, because I came across, I read a book recently by this FBI interrogator, and he had these 10 points for building rapport with strangers. And this was the one that actually jumped off the page for me, was that making sure that people always see the exit sign, that if they don't, they'll go look for it. And there'll be a defensiveness there. Or when they know that, hey, listen, it's okay. If this is not a fit, that's okay. Has a huge impact on just relaxing them and bringing down the defense shield. So as I said, it's part of the upfront contract, but I'm so glad you put it there. I think it's extremely powerful. So let's go on to commandment number 3, personal pain. Let's talk about that one.
Okay. So personal pain, this had a major impact on all of our conversations, because we look at business to business, but at the end of the day, we are all selling to people, and every challenge has to have an element of personal pain. Otherwise, where would be the urgency to act? So what we're looking at is, you know, your customer as well. We hope that, you know, they'd have no qualms about spending company money and saving his, you know what, at the end of the day. Focusing on the personal pain, it appeals to the emotions. And again, this was coming from the angle on that day that we discussed. We're all people and we are heavily influenced by emotions. We're not just business bots. And at the time, I think there was a great question you posed, and it stuck in our brains, which was, you know, once you've gone through the business qualification, then you can come to the question, you know, I know how it affects the business, but how does it affect you personally? Mm. And that gets you to an extra layer. And nobody forgot that question, because it's a fantastic way to, you know, really dig deeper and get closer to the client. And at the end of the day, then shut up, because it's our job not to be the mouth of the business, but to be the ears and the eyes first and foremost, really to allow the client to express the personal pains. That's hugely important.
It's powerful, certainly is. And I think what people forget as well is we talk a lot in sales about the compelling event, like some sort of external event. And that's true. And that should be there. But we forget to also mention our compelling personal reason to act as well, which can be sometimes disconnected from that compelling event that may affect others. So, and I think it's both. I think there's you have to focus on both. And certainly my experience is where people struggle is on the personal pain. And I don't know whether you got any insights on why that might be. Is it that they're uncomfortable, or is it that maybe it just requires a mastery of skill to have that conversation with somebody? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I honestly think as well that as the rapport builds on the call, at times I'm not sure if somebody thinks it's a sign of weakness to bring their personal pains into the equation, but everybody will have, whether it is a personal pain regarding a career move that they want to prove within the organization that they can achieve something, and by purchasing our solution they can enable that project, or perhaps it is literally their asses on the line. They have tried a number of initiatives in the past. They haven't worked. And it is a skill of a salesperson to soften the conversation and bring it around to the personal side. I don't actually think, Paul, it's something you learn from a book, but it was something that was highlighted to us that we need to be aware of. Yeah. And it's only through practice that you hone that skill.
Yeah. It's either our ass or our ego, sometimes both, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Here's commandment number 4, test the deadline. What was that one about?
Okay. So, there's like the houses with the erosion, you know, it's testing the deadline. On the day that we had our workshop, many people were asked to bring live opportunities to the table so we'd have a proper interactive discussion. And as you can imagine, you know, many of those opportunities were placed for closure at the end of a month or the end of the quarter. And in the absence of a rigorous investigation, we tend to stick to a date on an opportunity which makes ourselves feel better.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, the month closes or the quarter closes upon us and we realize that our opportunity is based on assumption and hope. So testing the deadline is really finding out what is the compelling event, for want of a cliche, but what is the compelling event behind the timing of the purchase from the customer side? And it's not a compelling event in our heads like quarter close. And I don't think I'm alone in this world, in a company that many of the salespeople have all of the opportunities placed on the 31st of the end of the quarter. So it's asking the hard questions, Paul, and being prepared to re-engage with the customer continuously during the time of the opportunity to recheck it. I think it's asking the hard questions and sometimes realizing that there is no definitive deadline and therefore there's a great chance that the opportunity could delay and slip. But it's definitely on that robustness. And if the deadline happens to be flexible, guess what? It's, in our estimation, it will slip. So that's all about testing the deadline.
Yeah, it's a variation of Murphy's Law. If a deadline can slip, it will slip, right?
And at the end of the day, everybody, the deadline is when the opportunity lists are pulled and when somebody in our finance department is doing a forecast estimation and they're pulling the deadline close date. So it's hugely important. It's not just for the salespeople. Lots of departments and companies are depending on the deadline.
Yeah, it's true. By the way, John makes an interesting point. He just sent in there via chat about when we were talking about pain. He also said personal gain, which is true. We can be motivated by gain as well as pain. That said, I think pain, personal pain, is always more compelling. It's like the, you know, if my gain is to climb to the top of the mountain, but there's a pebble in my shoe, that pebble in my shoe is going to get all of my attention. And I also feel that sometimes gain is just the flip side of pain, in that if I'm trying to gain something, it's usually because I'm motivated to move away from pain. So they are two sides of the same coin, I believe. Sometimes people express it in terms of, here's what I want to get, where other people will express it in terms of, here's what I want to move away from. But whether it's one or the other, there's always a motive, something driving it. So I think that's important. So another question here. So this is a question for you, Philip. How does Philip recommend you manage the multiple conversations on the deadline internally? Ooh, there's a good one. How do you manage the multiple conversations on the deadline internally?
Internally at Quest?
As
I said, it's a very, very difficult and thorny topic because the deadline is put in order to identify when the actual opportunity will close. But in the background, we are constantly working with people in our finance department, people in our sales operations department, because there is revenue flow projections based upon that deadline. I'm in the lucky situation in my department that there is nobody depending to ship hardware on the back of the deadline. But it's for me, it is one of the most important discussions which we have on a weekly basis, that the deadline, the close date, which is in Salesforce, is accurate. In actual fact, one of the tips that I received from an experienced colleague was to bring forward the close date of the quarter or the month by a week. It's like setting your clock fast. Set it in that way that you actually build some buffer and therefore try to close the month, because oftentimes, Paul, it's in our head. If we have a week to wait, we'll wait. So set the clocks fast.
Yeah.
Bring it forward. Bring the quarter close forward by a week.
Just two observations on that. First of all, the deadline is the customer's deadline, not ours. And we're either customer-centric or we're not. That's the first thing. And I get the internal pressure. I do understand it. The second point on that is deadlines are never an issue. This topic we're talking about is never an issue if somebody has enough deals in their pipeline. So you're done about, I know, bringing it forward to kind of set that artificial deadline. But if somebody's already made the target, what's the issue? So that can be, it can be a symptom of a different problem. It can be a symptom of a not enough pipeline problem also. So, but I think the technique here about testing the deadline was really to test whether it was real or not. When somebody says, oh yeah, we can do it by say the end of September, where you say, well, is there any way we could push that out and see how they respond? And if they go, no, there's no way we can do it, then we know. And then of course we can follow up with why does it have to be the 30th of September? And we can test it, because we know if they say, no, it's fine. You know, if it's November or December, that's fine too. Then we know it will slip. So it's hugely important. But as I said, I think there are other problems that can be in the background too, when people get upset about deadlines. All right, let's go on to commandment number 5, financial independence. Nice.
Yeah. So you mentioned something there a moment ago, if you've already reached your target. So this actually was growing as well out of an example we had with a colleague who said that he was in the lucky position a number of quarters ago to reach his quarterly target with 2 weeks to go. And therefore he had that type of financial independence. He'd reached his target. Everything afterwards was a gain. He was in acceleration mode. And he actually had a couple of conversations with clients where he was actually pushing back and asking, unsure if this was the right fit, if this was answering their business and technical need. And by having that, I'm not saying he was playing hard to get, but he definitely wasn't desperate. And those were some of the most profitable and satisfying deals he closed, because by having what he now recognized as financial independence, he didn't have the sweaty palms and he wasn't under pressure to close the deal at any cost. And in a salesperson's world, we're all salespeople. And we want to win every deal. But like I said, if we are under pressure, we are getting nervous, we display a nervous disposition, and the client will smell weakness. So the idea was here, as we discussed at our workshop that time, was attaching yourself to the process is what we want to do. We want to do the best possible job, and that's why we have our 10 commandments. So we want to attach ourselves to the process. But in some way, detach ourselves emotionally from the outcome. Mm-hmm. What that means is what will be, will be. And if I don't make a sale today, you will remember me, Paul. And we will, I'm not saying it's free consultation, but you will come back at a later stage. And what that does is sometimes takes the anxiety and stress out of the engagement. And it was only last night I was on LinkedIn and I was reading an article about what real C-level buyers want. And one of the points stuck out for me, which was, the guy said, aspire to be a trusted advisor and resist the urge to push and close when we're not ready. If I'm not having that feeling of financial independence, I'll push you and push you. So the idea, I mean, we've discussed this before as well, Paul. Is it something? Is it a state of mind? And maybe it is. Maybe it's a mantra you can teach yourself. When you're on the phone, you emulate a relaxedness and a calmness. I don't know what your opinion. I think it can be.
It's a mindset for sure. But an interesting thing that you said a second ago, financial advisor, and that's a mantra that comes up so often. We're financial, or not financial advisors, trusted advisors. I want to be a trusted advisor. You cannot be a trusted advisor if you need the deal. It just cannot happen. If you're emotionally attached to a specific outcome, your advice is already tainted. And you will never be regarded as a trusted advisor, because you're considered to have an agenda. Now, we all have agendas. However, the agenda, if it's the client's agenda that I want to do the best, and I genuinely don't care, because I know, you know what, if there's not business here, that's fine. I'll go find business elsewhere. But that has to be, that has to come out through your pores. And it is a mindset. There's no question about it. It's the same mindset as you said, you alluded to, that one of your reps, you know, had already made their number. And therefore, their whole mindset was just different. They didn't need it. They weren't attached emotionally. Yep. And that's all between our ears. That's a mental game that you have to master if you ever want to be a trusted advisor and be seen differently, which also has its own benefits, being seen different from other sales reps, from the customer's perspective. But it is. I mean, it was drilled into me when I started first, was I'm financially independent. I don't need the business. I'm financially independent and I don't need the business to get it. Inhabit that mindset. Yeah. It is acting. It's what great actors do. When they go on stage, they have to become the role. whatever is going on in, out, you know, in their life outside of that particular role, it all has to be shut out and they have to become that individual. Later on, they can go back to all the pressure, everything else that, that existed beforehand and take it all back on if they wish to. But in that moment, I must not be attached to the outcome to operate at my absolute best. And we spend all this time working on technique and process and sales, and we forget the most important element is what's going through our what's going on between our ears. And this for me would be certainly my number one. So yeah, I sorry. Okay. That was like, it's a bit of a soapbox of mine, but for me, it was extremely helpful. It just changes the dynamic in the relationship straight away. No questions. And it plays to what David Sandler said when he says, sales is a Broadway show put on by a psychiatrist. That Broadway show being the acting element, you've got to be able to act as if.
Hmm.
Yeah. All right, let's go on to commandment number 6. Put a figure on it.
Yeah, so put the dollar figure on it. You know, this came around, what we always try to do as well is to quantify the challenge in terms of money. To focus the outcome. A few minutes ago, we were discussing, the business challenges and more importantly, the pains and personal pains, and that it appeals to the emotional side of the brain. But to put a money number on it, we're trying to appeal also to the rational side of the brain. And the conversations that we can actually get involved in are things like, what will it cost you if you don't do anything? Or what have you already spent? How much money have you already spent trying to solve the problem and where has it gotten you? Maybe it's put you in a worse position. Or what's the opportunity cost in terms of obviously sales or manpower deployment or personal pains by not fixing the problem?
Mm.
But more importantly as well, we spend a lot of our time talking to line of business managers and users of our software. And we're incredibly proud, and I'll get a dig, that we have a customer satisfaction of 98%. So
nice.
Our customers love our solutions. But just because our software solutions make database administrators or developers feel great about their job, it's not enough to convince the CFO. So whether we like it or not, we are ruled by the finance guys. So by having this dollar discussion, we're helping the sums to be added up, and we're helping our client, the user of our solution, to start to build a case to bring it to their finance department for approval. So it's part of their case building. We're putting argument into their hands. And for me then, from a finance approval point of view, it's changing, it's taking a nice to have into a must have.
Mm. Isn't it a case though of, instead of the salesperson presenting an ROI analysis, which let's be honest, has to go through 5 levels of BS filters, then it has to be doubted, and then it has to be discounted in the mind of the buyer, to where you're actually starting with, here's your return. Now let's talk about the investment, because the dollar figure you're talking about, that's their return. That's what they're going to solve. That's what they're going to get as a result. And then you look at the investment. It's just, I think, another way of looking at ROI. And because it's their figure, it's their data, and they own it. Fair?
Yeah. There was a similar example, and I had it in a past life where we were selling, single sign-on software. And somebody could look at this particular solution and say, this is very expensive, and it's a nice to have, but it's not a must have. And if we actually then broke it down to talk about the number of employees, the time it spends for them to log on to various applications, you suddenly found out it was 10 minutes of everybody's day or 20 minutes spent logging on, logging off. You work that out by manpower hours, gross it up. It suddenly puts the cost of the software into perspective.
It does. It does. It also, by the way, it also makes the money conversation so much easier, because if somebody's going, look, this is expensive. Let's say a solution is 100,000 and you can say to a buyer, hand on heart, Mr. Customer, if you really believed in your heart of hearts that this was going to solve €1 million problem, would 100,000 be that expensive? And it just puts the whole thing into context and makes it easy to go, you know what? It isn't. When you put it that way, it isn't. And it takes that sticker shock away from the conversation around money. And then if the return is a million, as an example, and your price is 100,000, whether somebody else is 90,000 or 100,000, it really doesn't matter, because it pales in proportion to the dollar figure that they've got on it. So I think that's hugely important. Though these are not in any particular order, but I would certainly have that high on the list. It's not their money. Ooh.
Yeah, so we like this actually because we realize, you know, we are selling enterprise software. It's not their money. We're not calling out to individual subscribers for a mobile phone. And we have to remember that in most cases, unless it's an owner of the business, it isn't their money that they're spending. And when you're digging for that personal pain, they have an opportunity to spend company money and spend it for a personal interest, which is a reduction of a personal pain.
Yeah,
I'm not saying people will spend it willy-nilly, but it's our opportunity to get them to spend the company's money wisely. And where this came from, Paul, is one of our products, our Toad product range, which is database management tools. Toad is famous for its availability as a free version.
Yeah.
And it's how the awareness has built over the years. Toad is about 20 years old now. Many people, most of our users, get to know Toad as a free version, albeit a much reduced but free version, and move to trial and then to full license. So freemium for us is very important. It's an important platform for business development. But what happens when we come up against customers where we have that feeling that, you know, is free good enough? Or we're in the database management space, but we're not a database vendor. We're an independent software vendor. Mm. So we can also come up against a challenge. Aren't the native tools like, I don't know, Microsoft SQL Server tools, aren't they good enough? Why should we go and buy something more expensive from Quest? So by it not being their money, as long as we can clearly differentiate our solution from a free or a lower priced alternative, for us then it's all about asking if the saving, you know, is a saving of small saving of money justification enough if the, you know, hits the fan and the free tool proves inadequate. And it was something that said to me many years ago, actually, years ago, somebody said, you'll never save yourself to greatness.
Yes.
And at times, this is the big challenge. You know, don't try to save a little bit of money and maybe fall on your face.
Yeah, my father-in-law, who is a project manager for, let's say it's a large brewery, and would have had a substantial budget spend every year, was known for always blowing the budget. And when somebody came to him one day and suggest that they were able to do it cheaper with a different vendor, he turned to me, he says, you know what? He says, nobody will ever thank me for coming in under budget if something goes wrong. And I just, that encapsulated, you know, what you're talking about for me, that it's not how they think because it's not their money, but it is their ass on the line if something goes wrong. Fair?
Mm. Yeah. And that's it. And I think we just have to try to detach ourselves from that situation and get them just to spend the money wisely. We're not out to, you know, defraud, but get them to spend it wisely.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to commandment number 8. Drill into the pain.
So I remembered this one and I didn't use a graphic for want of a copyright violation, but this was the Braveheart scene that you built in our heads on the day where he's holding the army back before the charge on the English. And, you know, it's about drilling down into the pain funnel and holding back and building that tension.
Yeah.
Because we have it in our, it's in our DNA as salespeople that, you know, the moment we spot an opportunity, we jump in, email off a data sheet and try to go for the close.
Yeah.
Instead of perhaps, you know, investigating all angles and allow the prospect to express more deeply the pain points that they're experiencing without torturing them. I mean, you've got to know when to stop, but really to dig deeper. And this is something that we have to practice. None of these, I think, come naturally. It's through practice that it happens. But, you know, if you get the balance right, you won't have any regret on the customer side after the sale. I think there's a risk that if we jump to close too quickly, you get this buyer's remorse or whatever you call it, but the prospect will not have been ready to close and you'll have closed them prematurely.
Yeah.
So it's necessary to drill down a bit more, but you said it to us at the time.
Yeah.
It's a fine art of drilling versus torture.
Yeah. And for any listeners who are implementing this and struggling with this, because it wouldn't be uncommon to get so far down the pain funnel and then not be able to get much further than that, to get stuck. You get level one pain, maybe level two, but not get to that personal level, which is not untypical, or maybe not to broaden it out and look at other aspects of it. Do you have any tips?
Paul, the only thing I can say is, and people have said it, and it works, it's practice. It's really employing this on a daily basis, listening to colleagues, if you're lucky enough not to be working remotely and you're in an open office, but listening to colleagues, how they approach it, learning from and talking to each other, because I don't think it's a natural thing to go into deep discussions with who are essentially strangers on the other end of a phone. So it's a practiced art.
We've always been taught as kids, to keep your opinions to yourself or mind your own business. We have those little voices that you're being nosy, you're being intrusive when you're asking these questions. But again, something I was taught, which I always listen out for, is when the language changes. So what you'll always notice, top of pain funnel, the language is very intellectual. It's fact-based. Here's an issue we're facing. We'd like greater performance. We'd like to lower cost, etc. And it's just data. There's very little more than data. But when you really drill down to it and to that fine point you mentioned, Philip, which is when the language changes to more emotive language, I'm struggling with, I'm frustrated by, I'm concerned about, I'm hacked off with. When you're getting into that space with that language, the tone is changing. You know you're in the right place. You know you're just about to hit oil, to pick up on your metaphor. All right, let's go to commandment number 9. Tell a story.
Okay, tell a story. So, I mean, first and foremost, we all like a story, and there's a lot of stuff online at the moment about storification and telling stories, but it does allow you to differentiate yourself from the competition if you can bring a little bit of personality and warmth into your sales pitch, the conversation. It does allow us also to deflect customers' pain points onto a third party, and hopefully your prospect will be a lot more comfortable in seeing his challenge kind of through the eyes of somebody else rather than talking about him specifically. And as long as you get that relevance and color, and again, it's a practiced art, it'll stick in the mind. I said a few moments ago that we're supposed to be the eyes and the ears as well as the mouth. So it's often good. I saw a program one night, Paul, and it stuck in my mind, John B. Keane, the playwright. He was making the point that he sat behind his bar every night and served Guinness. And then when everybody went home, he basically put down on paper what he'd heard that night, and he went and sold the people back their own stories.
Wow.
And in a way, that's what we're doing. We're listening to our customer. We relay back their pain points in a story form so that they can, I suppose, familiarize themselves with it. And the good thing about a story is, if you don't have a good one, steal one and make it your own. So the idea is, in the office, even if you're new, talk to one of the more tenured sales reps. Mm. They'll tell you a few things and you'll just change it to your own, customize it a little bit. Mm. And we can all have 5 or 6 stories in our head. And I think it just brings a bit of personality to, the person on the other end likes to talk to you.
It strikes me, as you're saying that though, as well, Philip, that this also could be an answer to, if we went back to our previous point of drilling down for the pain, and sometimes we can get stuck, whether it's that we're not quite sure where to take the conversation, or not quite sure what question to ask, or maybe just the prospect is a little bit resistant to opening up, that maybe jumping into a story and taking them down somebody else's pain funnel might be the answer, and to look at their problem, but through a third party's eyes. Because not alone does it allow them to engage with the story without feeling pressure, but the fact you're relating this as another client also says, at some subconscious level, that you've got a level of expertise in dealing with this without having to actually say that. Would that make sense?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. It stops being also a sales pitch, and it takes a softer approach, and it could actually diffuse a situation, maybe coming out of a personal pain, drilling down the pain funnel, where the client kind of goes, enough's enough.
Yeah.
And then you can deflect, soften it with a story about somebody else who had something similar where you were able to help. And it just, it can diffuse the situation.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. I like it. Okay. We have a couple of questions coming in, but seeing that we're on commandment 10 in a second, I'll do that and then come back to the questions if that's okay with those who are interested in the questions. Let the customers close themselves. This is commandment number 10.
Yeah, it's even stronger. It said the customer will close themselves. So that's what we liked because, you know, the learning appealed to us as a team because every salesperson wants a smooth sale and, you know, the least possible friction. So it appealed to us greatly. Follow a process and the close will happen by itself. Because the close becomes, you know, the natural destination of a well-oiled sales process. That is, it's something that's predictable and it's profitable. And those are two important attributes as a salesperson who has a sales quota to achieve. You know, if we have facilitated the customer in concluding on their own the need for the solution or whatever service we're offering, it'll make them a happier customer. And hopefully what we're in the business of, Paul, is not the business of selling, but re-engaging. So they will come back to us because if they close themselves, they're bought into the process. And therefore, they'll want to deal with us again because hopefully they'll have a happy feeling coming out of the sale. And then everything should stack up, you know, the business problem, personal pain, the compelling debt, whatever it is. And then it's like what appealed to us on this one was that we visualized it was like a jigsaw and all the pieces fall into place and it's closed. And there's no awkward, you know, show me the money moment.
Haven't we just come full circle on this, though, Philip, that we started out with, and to answer John's question, we started out by talking about upfront contracts, and then now we're talking about let the customer close themselves. In effect, that's just an upfront contract where you agree on what has to happen, what's involved, and what happens next. And therefore, you're kind of pre-closing before you get to that end line. And then when you do get to the end line, it's just another upfront contract, which we've already agreed the terms for yes and for a no. So effectively, when we get there, we're just fulfilling the contract and the customer has effectively closed themselves. Would that be a fair way of looking at it?
Yeah. Yeah. For us, the beauty of it, you know, we're not in the apologies to anybody who's in the secondhand car sales business, but that's what we say. We're not in the secondhand car sales business, the hard sell. We are in the resale, the long-term relationship business. So for us, it's not about a hard sell and a full stop.
Yeah.
It is about the customer closing themselves and easing into a re-engagement process. And that will only happen if it's a mutual agreed sale. And that was the beauty of this that attracted us.
Perfect. Now, of course, most people are thinking commandment number 10, we're done, but you're in the county of Cork and it's not called the Rebel County for nothing. You actually put in commandment 11 just for fun.
We did, yeah.
Tell us about
that. We put in the old cliche. The old cliche, which is it's not don't get caught. No, it's practice. So yeah. It is a cliche, you know, but it is true.
Yeah.
All of these learnings, Paul, this is over a year since we were in that workshop and we're still learning and we are still practicing. And unless we practice these learnings every day, you know, in the customer conversations or pipeline reviews, we won't be successful. And practice means it will become second nature to us all. That process that finishes in the customer closing himself, you know, that will become second nature. And it won't appear, and this is, I think, most important, it won't appear contrived or wooden. That could be the worst thing. So it has to get into our DNA and become part of our personality. And I heard something that I read something on the internet and I was posting during the week, a bit of fun, but it was true. It was said, practice like you've never won and perform like you've never lost.
Ooh,
it is all about practice. Yeah, I found that. Yeah.
Love
I can't
that.
Copyright it because I found it.
Well,
we have to practice like we never won. Yeah.
Practice
like you never won and perform like you never lost. And that's the hard bit, but that's why we get paid money. Yeah. The dark science of selling.
Yeah. No, I can imagine there's several people now scribbling that down because that's profound. I love that. That encapsulates so much. So, yeah. All right. Listen.
So that's all about Practice, practice. Yep.
It is. It is. So that's it. We're up on time. We're actually slightly over time. So thank you to everybody. And again, my deepest apologies for that mess up at the beginning. It was totally 100% my fault. You would not believe if I told you how stupid a mistake I'd made with muting my and then not
practice, practice.
Oh, listen, don't. As soon as I discovered what I was, I could have kicked myself. Never mind. I know for a fact that the quality of the content you've just gone through, Philip, made all that at the beginning worthwhile. So thank you very much. So if there was a couple of quick questions. So I know people may have to drop off, but here was a question. Was one came in from John, was about the beginning, about what was upfront contracts. But what I would suggest to you, John, is I'll send out the recording. So go to that, have a listen to the recording rather than go back over that now. You had number one on your list, Philip, as upfront contracts. I don't know if you did them in order. You alluded to that at the beginning. But a question you had down from Pat was, what commandment would you think was most important?
The 11th. It is practice. It's a process, and these are learnings, and we've talked about them today, but if you don't practice them every day, and practice the weakest, you've got to practice where you believe you're weakest. So whether it's drilling down the pain funnel, that's where you should do role play with your colleagues, listen to how your colleagues do it, and then force yourself to engage with customers like that. I think the 11th is the most important. It's living it every day, because if you don't do it, I think it becomes contrived and wooden.
Yeah.
And where's the fun in that? It's you're under pressure and the customer feels an awkward moment, so nobody wins.
An anonymous one, which one do you think is most difficult?
Which one is most difficult? Financial independence. As a salesperson, I believe it is. Because we all want to make the sale. And unfortunately, not every one of us are in the lucky position to have so much pipeline that the quarter close isn't a pressurized situation. So I think that is the most important. And I was actually discussing with a colleague this morning about walking away. Financial independence is tough.
Yeah, yeah. And then finally, which was your biggest aha?
The biggest aha. That's a good one. I think show the exit. At the time, we liked that a lot.
Yeah.
The idea of having that confidence to say, look, if you don't like what I'm talking about, you're free to hang up the phone and there will be, you know, no hard feelings.
Yeah.
That showed a level of confidence in your preparation too. Because if I've given you a good upfront contract, I'm confident by saying to you, hang up if you want, Paul, you're not going to.
Yep.
It's nearly counterintuitive, yeah? You won't hang up then.
Yeah.
But that was an aha moment, yeah.
All right, excellent. Philip, once again, thank you so much. That was excellent.
All right. No, you're welcome. Go back to the core sunshine.
Good man. We'll talk soon. All right, bye-bye. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye. We'll be back next month. Bye now.